Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Survival Jobs, a podcast in collaboration with Broadway World,
where we talk to artists about their survival jobs that they had to get them to where they are and why they keep going. I'm Samantha Doan Tutsalo, and this is my amazing co-host. Sorry.
No, that was great. I love that. We're trying out a new intro, y'all. Tell us how it is.
Yeah, tell us how it is. If I'm going to like ever pay attention to what I'm supposed to do, then no, we'd be okay. Hi, Jason.
Hi. How you feeling?
Listen, I'm on vacation with my family. We're doing a little family reunion with my dad's side of the family. I just want to give a shout out to my cousin, Brittany Jean, because Brittany Jean Spears.
I know your cousin was famous. Ask her to donate to the Bridgeport Film Fest, Brittany Jean Spears.
I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want you to feel weird, but that is my cousin.
Yes.
No, but I do want to give her a shout out because on this trip so far, she's pulling out facts from episodes I don't even remember. She's like, oh, remember that episode when you guys talked about whatever you talked about? And I'm like, Brittany, you listened to that? She said she listens to almost everyone that she can. And I think that's so beautiful. And I didn't even know that. So shout out to Brittany for listening. Yes. Thank you. Love you. I also want to say I'm on vacation with them. We're in this gorgeous Airbnb in Destin, Florida. And I am, you know, trying to record in this new area. So I was putting the lamp on this bed where my computer is. And it fell off and shattered at this Airbnb.
Well, now you confessed on camera.
I want to lie and say it was already broken because what if it, but everyone's telling me not to. So I shattered a lamp. That's how I'm feeling. A little bit stressed about that. But other than that, you know, it's nice to be away. It's a lot been going on. So it's nice to like be off from work and not check my email. But I have been, I've been opening it here and there and I have about 1200 emails right now. So, but I'm not thinking about it until I'm back.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Exactly. How are you? We're in big crunch time for Bridgeport Film Fest.
I feel like I am that lamp that you were holding and trying to put on your bed and you're putting on the bed and I'm the, like the lamp like, oh no. Oh no, it's not a good idea. Yeah, teetering. Like, oh no. Why is this lady putting me on this bed? Uh-oh, here I go. Falling. Hopefully
and
I
only
won't
half
crash.
And only half of you. Well, the whole lamp didn't shatter, just half of it did. So don't worry.
There you go. Hopefully.
All right.
But yeah, you know, I'm just, you know, in the middle of getting ready for BFF, Bridgeport Film Fest, and it's been a little busy. But I was also at BroadwayCon this past weekend. And
I know.
Because you were in Florida. So my friend, Sarah Jean, joined me. She was like my assistant to help me get some footage.
Yes. And
that's so funny because you have a Brittany Jean and I have a Sarah Jean.
I love that. We just love the jeans.
Yeah. But so we're going to do, hopefully we'll do like a little mini episode that drops soon about BroadwayCon. And because I got some good, hopefully it's good footage of everything that went down. Or not everything, but a lot of things that went down. But, you know, I thought it was pretty incredible. You know, they opened up with a panel that was with Hillary Clinton, former First Lady and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She was on a main stage with an exclusive conversation with Broadway legends LaShawn's and Julie White, Donna Murphy, and my queen, Vanessa Williams. I love Vanessa Williams so much. So seeing that panel and discussion about those iconic women being in Broadway and working and you know the pressures that they faced in their careers was unbelievable. And there were so many great, great events throughout the whole weekend that we'll dive into a little bit later. But yeah, if you guys didn't go to BroadwayCon, make sure you get a ticket for next year. It was everything I didn't know it could be. It was so much fun. There was so many, like, there was Kite Runner. They did like a spotlight of this, of the new show Kite Runner. I had no idea anything about it until I went to that spotlight. And I'm like, I got to get tickets right away. it's incredible, like just hearing the artists speak about it, and like stuff like that happens at Broadway Con, you know. And I'm not sure if people know exactly what it is, but yeah, I'm rambling now, but
no, that's amazing. I'm so happy you got to go and represent our show.
Gave out so many cards.
Yes, hello, shout out to everyone listening to this episode from a card that you got from Jason.
Yes.
But yeah, we'll definitely do a little mini follow-up episode just to dive a little bit more into that, so we can give everyone a little overview of what went down.
Anthony Rapp was there, our girl Freddie Walker Brown,
shout out Freddie Walker.
Yes. Yes, it was iconic. It was so iconic.
I love that. I want to talk, I want to take a little turn, if that's okay, from Broadway world. You're talking about like this women panel of all these women talking about working on Broadway. So our guest today said something interesting in her episode about, you know, she was a woman, you know, trying to make it in the 80s. And so people would say she was bossy just because she has like a strong personality. And, you know, I think, you know, as women, we run into that a lot. And so I read this play by the pool in Florida called What We're Up Against, written by Teresa Rebeck. I never know if it's Rebeck Rebeck. She's one of my favorite playwrights. Yeah. Yeah. She's one of my favorite playwrights. And I'm, you know, I really have fallen off of my auditioning and all that stuff. So I'm really trying to get back into the groove. So I set up an appointment with my acting coach, just trying to get some new monologues under my belt. But I read this play, and the whole idea of this play is this woman, Eliza, gets hired at this firm with architects, with mostly men and one other woman. And all she wants to do is work. And they're not giving her any projects because they're saying, like, she's too entitled. She thinks she's better than everyone. She this, she that, just because she actually has good ideas. And the men in the play cannot take it. So I just want to like sort of shine a light on like women who are strong and have voices and talent sometimes get deemed as bossy or entitled or thinking they're better than everyone or bitches. And that ain't right. So it's a great a great play, and it's a great monologue I got. So
I love that.
If y'all are looking for a good, it's a quick read. It's two acts, but it's not like it's probably not even a 90-minute production. I don't know that for a fact, so I don't want to speak. But if you guys are looking for a new play, and by the way, it's not new. I think they did a production of it, I believe, in 2008, or maybe that's 2011. One of those years.
I want to tie something
new,
in.
But yeah, definitely read it. Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
No, I was just going to say, because, you know, at the panel, I think it ties back into what you're saying, was, you know, the women were talking about like how they rarely get to work with female directors. You know, I think, you know, a couple of them only worked with like two, like out of their whole careers. And they were saying like working with women directors, like how much better it is, like how much better the set is and the rehearsal process. And then Hillary Clinton talked about how when she was like a young lawyer, you know, all the men would be like, close your door. You know, don't go to dinner, but keep your door closed. So like they think that you're working still. And she was like, okay, that's weird. And they're like, well, when you come back from dinner, like open your door, but like walk around the firm and like, you know, talk to people and talk and meet and like tell people what you're doing. And like basically she was just saying, you know, like men always don't do the work. You know, they're just like fronting like they're doing the work. And women like get shit done sooner, right? And like, why spend, you know, 16 hours at your job when you can get the work done in 8 and go home? You know, like, why do you have to like put up this front that you're like working on these extra hours when the men weren't really working those extra hours? They were just like chilling out, you know? Like, I don't know. I just thought that was very interesting. And women need to rule the world. Come on, men are just disasters.
Men are just disasters. Well, somehow we do not all men. We love some of the men, but it's just...
There's like a 10% who are a straight disaster.
I don't want to like shit talk all the men, but
I will. But I'll do it for you.
Thank you.
The men are disasters. No, just think about how much better the world would be if we had, you know, really incredible, brilliant women in charge for a little bit. Like, women are just, you know, I don't want to like, assume.
Moody. Just kidding.
Right?
The narrative. There's no,
but women are just so like more empathetic and caring and smarter and more decisive, and men are crazy and men are like big babies. And I mean, look at freaking the Kavanaugh trial when he was like crying and ranting like a maniac. And yet Chris, Professor Blasey Ford, who was just so cool and calm and collected. You know what I mean? Just like, I don't know, we can go on and on about how sucky men are, but.
Thank you for gassing up women. I love that.
And always.
I want to mention a show that I've never really watched called Scandal. Just kidding. If you're our faithful listeners, you'll know I talk about Scandal all the time on this show.
Yes, Olivia Pope. And
Olivia Pope's dad, Eli Pope, tells her all the time, as a Black woman, she needs to be twice as good.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that for all women, especially Black women and women of color, you need to be twice as good. Because if you're just mediocre, you're a mediocre man's going to get farther than a mediocre woman. So you got to be twice as good. Be cheers to that with my coffee cup and my shattered lamp. And my shattered lamp.
Maybe your Airbnb host listen to the podcast and they'll see how sad you feel about the lamp. And
listen, that guy, I didn't reserve this. My name's not anywhere. So there's no trace of this.
I'm dead.
Except, yeah. Yeah, me too.
Anyway, should we talk about our girl?
Our girl, Kristen. So
yes, Professor.
I think Professor Kristen.
Professor Keeping Badass. Keeping up
with Kristen.
Yes.
I think Kristen's our first guest that has like reached out to us being like, hey, I've listened to the show, would love to come on. And I think that's cool. I think that's amazing.
That is amazing.
You know, Jay, like whoever thought we'd be in this part of our show, in this stage of our process with this show, I don't know what I'm saying, where somebody's going to be like, hey guys, I listened to your show, would love to come on, I love what you're doing. So we were like, yes, girl, let's go. And she was on Broadway with Company. She's also from Connecticut, just like us. This happens a lot. And it's the
season
awesome.
2 theme, I guess.
Yeah, it kind of is, right?
Because
our another guest that's about to come on, Mia, is also from Connecticut. So it's just all the vibes.
Season 2 is all about Connecticut. Wait,
let's talk about Kristen. Yeah, so Kristen, she's amazing. You guys are going to love this episode. She is like multi-hyphenate doing all these things. I got tired just listening to her talk about all the things she does and has done in her past. But let me tell you a little bit about her. I'll kick it off, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
So Kristen Huffman appeared as a leading role in the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical by Stephen Sondheim Company. It also won a Drama Desk, Outer Critics Circle, and Drama League Award for Best Revival of a Musical. This was 2006, people, not the most recent one. She played the leading role of Sarah, as well as flute, sax, and piccolo. Kristen is the founder and producing artistic director of the New Paradigm Theater, a professional nonprofit theater company promoting social responsibility and fostering creative problem solvers, leaders, and global citizens through theater arts education and productions.
Yes. She is a professor at the University of Hartford and trains singers and actors for a life on the wicked stage. She's a member of Actors Equity Association, Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, and she frequently judges international choir competitions in the US and Canada. She graduated summa cum laude from both Capital University Conservatory of Music, BM, with a concentration in voice and flute, and Northwestern University with a master's of music in opera. Check out her website, www.kristenhuffman.com. And she's badass, y'all. She is the truth. Yeah. I'm super excited. Enjoy Maybe it. I see Little Mermaid. They have a really...
Oh, yeah.
She talks about the production of Little Mermaid. It sounds incredible. I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, I can't wait to go. I'm going to take my niece.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Enjoy, everybody.
Enjoy, everyone.
Hi, Kristen. Happy Survival Jobs Podcast Day. Wait, what? What did
We're
I just say?
So happy to see you. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. I was excited to be here.
Yeah, so I love when we have fellow Connecticut folks on, and that sort of happens more often than not these days. So shout out to Connecticut. I heard you say you're in Milford.
I am. Yep.
I love Milford. I have a few friends that live in Milford. So I always am, when I need to escape the city, I like bop over there. It's just so nice. nice beaches, nice restaurants. It's like so Gilmore Girls vibe. We love Gilmore Girls on this podcast.
It is.
I think Milford was one of the towns she based it off of.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes. You know, like in the green in Milford, the gazebo, the like white gazebo.
Yep. Uh-huh.
It's the exact same like format in Gilmore Girls. You should check it out.
Okay. I will.
Samantha's a huge fan.
I am like a crazy, crazy Gilmore Girls fan.
Well, I'm one of those people who moved up during the COVID. I've been here since 2000. We moved out from Ohio. I was having a career going, and my agents here in New York are like, you need to be closer to New York if you want to be on Broadway. And so I'm like, all right, my compromise is Connecticut. And so I can always just hop on the train, you know, and get in. And little by little, Milford has really grown up, especially last year, with everybody going, wait, I can send in video auditions? Okay, I'll live in Milford.
Wait, yep. I have to do a really quick sidebar. Do you live on Park Street?
I do.
I met you.
Wait, when?
Carmel across the street is my really good friend. I came over for coffee. I just put it all together.
That's so funny.
We talked about the podcast together. You're like, let me know. I'll advertise it to my students.
I'm blank on that. I'm so sorry.
No, me too. And by the way, sitting here just now.
Yeah,
that's so funny. Sitting here just now, I'm like, wait, I fully came to your house for coffee last summer.
I remember.
Because it's all setting in. I'm like, someone who's on Broadway, who now has a theater in Connecticut, da 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 da. And I'm like, oh my God, we actually met.
Okay,
that's so funny. That's so good. Anyway, hello, nice to see you again. Life is so funny.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I can't wait.
Anywho, I love that. The world is so small and funny.
Yep.
Wow. But anyway, let's jump into the show. So this podcast is called Survival Jobs. As you know, you've had a wonderful, successful career, but surely you've had some survival jobs on the way. So do you have a survival job from your past that has sort of positively impacted where you are today, how you got to your career now and what you do?
You know, it's interesting because my undergrad at Capital University was music education, not theater. Because my mother said, I know you may think you want to perform, but you need to, and these were her words, have something to fall back on, right? And I performed. It was a small enough school that I could perform and do all the stuff I needed to do, take all the instrument methods classes, all the various things you do as a music ed person. And then I went on to grad school in vocal performance at Northwestern. That was opera. But here's the thing. I never stopped teaching. I've always had a private studio ever since college, private vocal studio, also teaching flute, you know, and some piano. And that had allowed me to continue to stay in the business because that's pretty flexible. So the story of how I got company on Broadway is from I would call it a survival job because it did allow me to survive long enough to get my Broadway debut. And when I was performing also regionally, you know, you can stop your studio, go perform, come back, and they're still there. You know what I mean? So that, honestly, that it's the best job in the world because I'm still in the arts and I'm influencing, I'm learning more about my own technique because I'm teaching it to other people. It gets me to not just be one of the actors that's only thinking about myself. I have to focus on that other person all the time. So that, and then here's what happened. When I moved to New York, and you know, I'm not in my 20s at that point, so I'm taking a bunch of casting director masterclasses. And one of them was with Bethany Knox, who's at Telsey. And her undergrad was music ed too. So I'm pretty sure. Anyway, what we connected on was that, oh yes, when you're a music education major, you have to take woodwind methods and brass methods and string methods so that at some point you could teach those if you had to. So she knew I played flute. And then when company came up and they wanted instrument playing actors, she called me in because she knew I played that. So I went in, I played my flute, which I played for years, you know, like forever, and piano. And then she knew that I was seriously being considered for the part of Sarah, and they wanted that person to also play saxophone. So she looked right at me in the audition room and went, and Kristen also plays sax because it's the same fingering as flute. And I went, uh-huh. So I went home on the Metro North home to Milford.
We love the Metro North.
And I get a call from my agent. They go, you booked the show, but they say to brush up on your saxophone. And I was like, ah! So I teach at the University of Hartford as well, in the Hart School, in the musical.
Yes, theater. Hart School, yes.
I hired a TA two times a week to teach me how to play that freaking saxophone, because we were supposed to play and sing for Mr. Sondheim as a last approval. Luckily, we didn't have to, because I would have fainted. But that's how I learned to play the saxophone, because of my survival gig. And then because somebody else also was music ed. I think that's like a really fabulous story.
It is. And look where it got you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that for me, and I continue, I still teach. Here in this space right here. And
literally heard you teaching.
See? Well, during COVID, that window right there, here's my piano, that window that I'm over here behind me, I could just open it up and they could be outside and I could play and they could sing. So I could.
So good.
Because, you know, kids were so bored.
Oh, yeah, of course. Teenagers,
as well as adults, obviously. But they were so bored. So they could come sing and not be in masks when they were outside.
That's so smart. Wow. Yeah.
But again, you know, it is a survival job. Again, it pays my bills.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, being at the university too, that's a little more restrictive, you know, because I can't go and come as easily. But it definitely is a higher level, and I'm teaching and learning myself as well. So it's still, you know, I've always done it, even on Broadway. I still taught before I caught the Metro North.
While you were doing 8 shows a week?
Yep.
Wow. kudos.
I narrowed down my studio a little bit. I didn't teach at the university there. I took time off there. But I did teach my survival gig, which is my home studio. But I do love teaching. So I know a lot of survival gigs you don't love. You know what I mean? But this one is at least, it feeds off of the other one.
Well, that's why I love this show, because you think of survival job as being like, oh, I hate my serving job, or I hate like my babysitting job. But that's not always the case. You can have, and I think that's the importance of this show, is to say like, hey, you can always be an artist and always work toward this dream that's tough to get to, and not have to be miserable along the way.
It's like parallel.
And I tell my college kids nowadays, especially, you should double major, so that you can do something like web design. I've hired one of my former students at the university to help keep up the website of New Paradigm Theater Company. She also looked at my website and kind of helped redesign that a little bit. You know what I mean? So that's something we can do. And I think every school also needs to, any musical theater division should also remind people they need a lot of on-camera work, because look what we're doing. You know, and that's something that they can do as a survival. Maybe your commercials are your survival gig for your theater. You know what I mean? Because it pays. Yeah. So I always encourage them, maybe be a grant writer, maybe be a graphic designer. All of those things you can do online and still go do what you're
exactly.
doing.
Exactly. Work on your own terms, work on your own time, and make your own schedule.
And college is so expensive now that, you know, more than when I was there, there's no way to pay it off with just a theater gig. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Unless you book a TV show, but, you know.
You don't know if that's going to last.
Which I'm still waiting on that. I'm like, that's how I'm going to pay off my student loans. You could get that one TV gig.
There you go. Good. Well, you know, you're creating.
Same.
Yeah, but you know what? Create your own work. Don't wait for them. Create your own.
It's true. Yeah.
Why not?
And he does.
I never thought I'd create my own theater. I just wasn't in the cards. But ended up that I saw a niche for a new kind of theater, you know? And then I'm like, and then those people that felt that same way were attracted to my board.
Yes.
Or to the people that are in the shows. And I use my Broadway people and I use my teaching. Like, it all came together. I hadn't planned on that either.
I love that. Just well, can we? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Can we flip it and reverse it? Do you have a survival job from your past that you maybe
didn't like?
Did not love?
When I was in grad school, I did whatever people do. I waitered, but I didn't really have any experience. I was not good. I was friendly, but I, like everyone else, had waitering nightmares where the tickets were piling up and whatever. And I had some mean customers. I would say if you're ever going to deal with the public, you should be a waiter at some point or in some sort of
service.
Because you do learn to hold your tongue. You do learn, you know, that not everybody's going to be nice to you, but you need to present a certain face. You know what I mean? So I did that for 2 years through grad school. And, you know, it helped pay for food and different things that I needed to do. But then that's when I had more, little by little, started having more of my private voice studio. And I was like, wow, an hour of that pays me what I work 4 hours for being a waiter.
Yep. Yeah.
You're like, what makes most sense? Yeah.
It's not on my feet all the time. And I'm doing something artistic. I used to, it was at a place called Convito Italiano in.
Yes.
And right near Northwestern. And I would actually literally walk around memorizing my recital that had a lot of Italian in it. So people thought I was speaking Italian when I would come to the table and they'd be like, ooh, say something. And I would just quote a song lyric. So I was.
That's so good. See, and then you incorporate your art into your survival job and it all works. I love it.
I love that so much.
Yeah. We did talk a little bit about company already. You touched a little bit about it, but I want to talk a little bit more about it and what that experience was like for you, a little bit more about the process. Also, Milford is not that close to the city. So how was that experience like with the commuting and like always feeling rested and ready? 8 shows a week and company is not nothing. It's a long show. And by the way, it's Sondheim. So I know I just said a lot of questions to you. So whatever you can remember.
Since we're on BroadwayWorld.com, if you just look me up on there, I did a whole series of, now they're called blogs, but back in 2006, that's not what they were. And I wrote from Cincinnati Playhouse on, that's where we developed it. And then it was taken to Broadway. I wrote stories about how John Doyle and the cast and all of us put it together. And they're funny because it was stressful. But it was great. And it, and it was scary. It was everything you want to be as an actor. So I wrote a whole series of stories. Oh, what did I call it?
Oops. You have to link it.
Yeah. You know.
I actually saw it when I was, I can't remember what it's called either, but I saw it. I was like, oh my God, Broadway World. Look at that, everyone.
Yeah.
So always coming back.
To read from the beginning of what it was like to put it together. They can do that. I would just say it is was the hardest thing at that point I had ever done up till then, trying to sing, act, and play your instrument while you were doing it. But his system, John Doyle's system, made it so intuitive, and you did it, and you could create at the same time. You weren't locked into just one way of thinking. I try to, as I produce, I try to put those kinds of people together on the stage, because I just feel like that's so much more creative. My commute, I stayed overnight on Tuesday nights in the city, and I stayed overnight on Friday and Saturdays, so that I only had to do the 4-day, I think that's what was left, commute on the train. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It's a time to kind of, the train's not bad. And you just hop on it, and then you just wait until you get into Grand Central. So you're doing work, or you're watching a movie, or you're kind of centering, you know? So it wasn't terrible at all. I would do it again. And I like having a yard and being, and coming home someplace that I have dogs and a husband, and I can just chill. And it's not the energy of the city. I'm very high energy. I don't know if you noticed.
No, I always say that, because like I used to have a car in the city, and I just love taking the train back here. Yeah. It's like so relaxing. You can get stuff done in that 85 minutes or however long it is, you know?
Yeah. And it's safe, and Milford's very safe. And I just feel like my high energy and the city's high energy, we would have burned each other out. So it gives me a chance to kind of.
That's so nice. Were you able to see the most recent revival, and what did you think of it?
I have not. Clips, and I love Katrina. Yeah.
Katrina,
I loved her in The Band's Visit. And I love the concept. I think company is one of those shows that you can play with, you know. And then one of the blogs that I wrote, he wrote it, not Sondheim, but George Firth wrote it as individual little therapy sessions for himself. And then it was Hal Prince and Steven who said, you should make this into a musical. So they helped him with that. But he actually told me like who the characters it were in the show. You know, it was Sally. Why can't I remember anybody's names right now? Sally, the lady who was on Hot Lips Houlihan in the movie. She was who Sarah really is. And I would ask him about her and her husband. So it was her first husband. So anyway, that was kind of cool to get to talk to, because George hadn't passed at that point. Neither had Stephen. So we got a chance to work. Except for I could only call him Mr. Sondheim. I taught his music to my students for so long with his name, Stephen Sondheim, up in the right hand. I always just could only say Mr. Sondheim. Everybody else called him Steve. But weird to me.
Of course. I don't think, I mean, when you have somebody who's like so legendary, like you want to show that honor and that respect. I mean, I'm sure he was super kind and was like, just call me Steve. Great.
All of them were. And George was funny and, you know, and just kind of crazy a little bit. So, yeah, you can see how they would have worked together really well. Very different personalities, but fun.
Oh, I love that. Well, you have done, I guess you performed in operas, theaters, symphonies. Do you have a preference? What do you love most out of those?
I love musical theater most. Opera was great. I did 7 years of professional opera, a lot of secondary roles. It was fine. And I have a big voice. But it was so much about the voice, and it just can make a person crazy in the head, and you worry all the time. I have a little residual worry about that. When my voice, oh my God, you know, but with musical theater, I think I sing better now than I did when I did opera, because musical theater, you have to develop your voice in a way that you can sing all sorts of music, you know, and you're not constantly pounding loudness onto your chords. So I feel better. Plus we have mics on our head all the time, you know? I almost feel like I'm marking most of the time. Until I something, you know, and I tell my students as well, there's no reason for you to blast like you did in the olden days, you know, just place it correctly, sing the right way, support it. And then your voice lasts longer too. I prefer, you know, I did all the Rodgers and Hammerstein girls early in my career, cause that was a little closer to opera, you know, and very standardy. And then, I worked for Maine State Music Theater. I love them. I went in for Brigadoon thinking I'd be Fiona, because that's, you know, the types of roles, Maria, Nellie, all those girls.
Yeah.
And they came back and cast me as Meg. And she's the one that's like, and I was sold from then on. It was probably, he was the first person to see me as a little bit more like leading lady, left of center, little character-y, which is also what Sarah and Company is. And I learned to mix better, and I learned to I was like, I would much prefer to be the secondary character who gets the laughs, you know, and because
it's so fun.
I love comedic. I love energetic. I love bold, you know, and those characters are that. So I'm always happy with that.
Love that.
But yeah, those are more, I got told in the opera world, my acting was interfering with my singing. And I thought, well, perhaps then I need to be someplace where they like the acting.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Do you have a favorite role that you played? Sorry, I'm going off script, Jay.
No, I love that. Yeah. I was going to ask the same thing.
You know, I did like Meg a lot. I liked Gooch a lot, believe it or not. I have roles I want to play coming up. And I like playing evil. I haven't done that before. So that's really fun. I guess it's always my next role would be my favorite. I did like last year I was in Footloose and I played Vi and I liked her. She had a lot of depth. I actually played Smee in Peter Pan and Mrs. Darling, because our version was very unique, as opposed to Hook becoming Dad or Dad becoming Hook. We did it that way. So that was really fun. Yeah, I really like those very colorful characters now.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
And what's the point of doing this? Like, if you're not going to have fun.
And I mean, I really love Sarah. She was interesting, always kind of concerned about keeping her family together and her weight and, you know, things that I've struggled with as well. And, you know, I loved that cast. I love the ensemble-ness. I love anything that's an ensemble cast much better than like I have to be in the spotlight. I'd rather be the secondary.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's more of like a family community vibe. That's amazing. So I want to take a turn and start, and I want to talk a little bit about the New Paradigm Theater. And when you started that, what was your inspiration to create this theater, and how did you juggle, you know, creating your own theater while doing your survival jobs and also still pursuing your career as a performer? I mean, it's not nothing to just create a theater, right? And like produce shows and do it.
I didn't really know how hard it was at the time, 2012. It's just, I looked around, I've worked at so many regional companies, loved them. And then I also at, you know, at higher levels, higher and higher, low and high, I mean, dinner theater to everything. And I saw places that were either going out of business or did, like I'd worked at them, then they weren't around anymore after that. Or I saw their audiences were aging out. And I thought, this is an art form I love. What do we need to do to make it relevant? And I do mean for everyone, right? And this was 2012. And I thought, well, A, the audiences need to think they can see themselves up on stage. So clearly the casting needs to change. And then also we need to find a way to appeal to younger people as well, because they can use Netflix, you know what I mean? So and my own background, my dad's a Lutheran minister and a professor, and my mom's a music teacher. And we had already grown up together for various charities and things. So I kind of had that thing tied into my chemistry as well as being a teacher. When you're a teacher, something about, I mean, I think at heart, I'm probably a teacher, like in my heart, that's what I am mostly in whatever way. So, and I've been a producer since I've been like 5 years old, you know, when
yeah.
Come over, we put together a play, we made our parents watch it, you know, so I'm doing that. And you know, it's interesting as a girl growing up in the 80s, you know, you were told you're bossy at that point. Things are changing, which I like. There's a meme. I'm not bossy. I got leadership skills.
Seriously.
So it was, there weren't a whole lot of female artistic directors that I could ask for advice in 2011, 12, when I was doing this. But I did have some very good sounding boards, men who were generous with their time and kind of helped me figure out what I was doing. And I realized, you know, New York, when you do a show, they don't have a theater. They rent the space. They rehearse over here and they rent a space. Why do we have to have a actual building that then we have to pay mortgage for and then we go under, right? And this is before COVID.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the new paradigm. The second one was, why don't we always tie this into a social justice initiative? So when we do things like a Little Mermaid, it made sense to tie it into the Maritime Aquarium at Norwalk and highlight the issue, and their nonprofit, we're a nonprofit too, but highlight the issue of marine debris and how the environment is caving in and how we need to be taking care. Little Mermaid swim through the ocean today, she'd hit plastic. So our sets, our costumes, everything out of those plastics we have cleaned up with them at the beaches and what we're recycling. The costumes look amazing. I hire professionals because I know those people in my life to do the designing. But we have young people elbow to elbow with our Broadway stars on stage, because that's how I learned at a young age. Yeah. College was great. But when I was on stage with a pro, I was like, oh, that's what you're supposed to be doing. That's how you study. That's how, you know what I mean? So that's part of the new mixing. It's kind of a hybrid. It's not totally professional. It's not totally community. And everybody's like, what are you? You don't have a building. You have Broadway people, but you have teenagers, but you have. So that and tying it to a social justice nonprofit and helping them get their mission out to an audience of people that might not. Plus, our casting has always been extremely diverse. Our first one was Oliver in 2016. And our Oliver, I had never seen an African-American Oliver. Maybe there had been, but we also, Paul Bogave, who is a Grammy Emmy winner, Paul Bogave, he helped rearrange the music. And so in the beginning of Oliver, we talk a lot, but in the beginning of Oliver, you know how it's, is it what we're waiting for? If we wait till 84, all we ever get is, you take the music, the notes out, it's rap. And that's what we did. So we had a lot
of,
as well as typical Fairfield kids, you know, you live in Bridgeport, there's that line. And here's the haves and the have nots. So we didn't say that our production was based in Bridgeport, but if you looked at the graphics, that was Bridgeport, not London. So we had,
I love that. Oh my gosh.
Really made it very, our Dodger was female. So we were doing that before it became the trend to do it. And I looked out on our very first audience of Oliver, because that was our biggest main stage show we'd ever done. And a third of them were from this young man's church. A third of them had never been to a musical before, but they'd heard it was sort of like Hamilton. A third of them were the old time musical theater goers. I was more worried about them, but they loved it. because the intent of it, and we tied it to the Bridgeport Council of Churches, their soup kitchen, and our cast volunteered at the soup kitchen. So we were teaching our children about leadership. We were teaching them about a nonprofit that had to do with the show and tying it in. And so for me, that's the way theater, that's what I had in mind for when I started a theater company. This is the new paradigm.
Wow, snaps.
And now we've continually gotten a different nonprofit for every single show that reflects the theme. And it's usually not an arts nonprofit.
That's amazing.
I mean, congratulations. Well,
yeah, Jinx, right? That's a wow.
It's been a hard slog, though. I will not lie to you. It wasn't easy. I just have wonderful people around me helping me build it. I've got great board members who are producers and our video. We've always had a lot of video and film work in our shows. When we did Bye Bye Birdie, we used the television camera and projected the black and white image behind him onto. We perform at Black Rock Church, 925 seat state-of-the-art theater. It's huge. It's the most beautiful in this area, in my opinion, theater. It's their worship space. And we rehearse at Emmanuel Church in Weston. We trade sometimes our performers to sing for their services. And then we are able to use their performance, you know, their rehearsal space. So again, we couldn't do it without these people. So I feel pretty lucky to be able to produce that. Almost, it seems like all my other gigs now were survival gigs to get to this producing gig and performing.
For sure.
That's incredible. Congratulations.
Thanks.
We'll definitely try to get over to see Little
August
Mermaid.
18th and 20th.
I need to bring my niece to that. She loves Little Mermaid. And I've been like shoving
to dress up in her whatever she.
Oh, her Ariel
or mermaid character.
I've been like shoving Broadway down her throat since she was like two, and so that would be a great like first experience of a live musical. Yeah, I have such a stage aunt.
Well, warn her that the costumes are going to look a little different. The Disney. They're amazing. Like, you know, the Ursula outfit is all big plastic bags. And
what an amazing idea to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I also love Brooklyn the musical. And so when you're saying like everything's made of the plastic, I'm like, so Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Well, recycled or a green approach or, you know what I mean? And I think that's another new thing. You know, maybe we'll continue to do that for every show. We'll recycle something.
That's super cool. Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the close. We're going to do a quick little game at the end. But before that, because you teach, you're a professor at the University of Hartford and you teach music, what's the best advice that you give your students who are looking to get into this wild, wild profession that we are all in?
Well, as I said earlier on, it's really to have, I'm not even sure what I call it survival. I would have it like have a couple of gigs. Do you know what I mean? And and try to stay in it as long as you can. Because it's going to take time to develop the contacts, the networking, you know, and try to find that survival job that allows you to have time to do that the thing you love. You know what I mean? I also think multitasking, learning to multitask and time management is super important. I can't tell you how many people I haven't hired back because they were not good time managers. You can't just be artsy. You've got to develop the other side of your brain, a business side of your brain, or the best performers I know are either business people themselves or their agent is, but they still have that knowledge. You can't just go out with stars in your eyes and be artsy. It ain't gonna work.
Yeah. Facts.
That's really good. Yeah. Facts. I was giving Jason a side eye during that. Cause I'm like, Jason is the best. Did you see me, Jason? Yeah. Jason is the best time manager. I know he always is doing like 9 million things at once. Mm-hmm. And I can like
not do two.
I'm
writing this down. Honestly, those are few and far between. The 80-20 rule really is very important. 80% of the people are not going to be the kind that you're going to hire back or want to work with. 20% are, and you need to keep those close to you. And that's when you return emails and phone calls quickly. Do they make sure they show up when they say they will?
Right.
Well, I forgot and I double booked. Well, that's not my problem. That's yours. you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And for again, sure. I won't, it's okay. I just won't hire you back again or recommend you. Man, I get like 5 calls or emails a week to recommend either former students or people I've worked with now, you know? And I don't say bad things about anybody, but I will say this one, really great time manager, or you will have an excellent time, very positive.
Yeah.
And that goes a long, long way. Yay. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us. You're amazing. And I'm so happy. And life is so funny. I literally had coffee with you and we, you know, coordinated this whole episode and it just didn't click until we were talking. So that's so funny about life.
The whole pandemic happened. So
yeah. And I'm breaking lamps. I don't even know where I am.
Play with Carmel and Zane. And then you guys could all 3 come see the show.
Yeah.
And then you
Okay. We'll all do it. Yeah, it's just going to be a whole fun thing. So as Jason said, we always like to end the show with a little game. But before we do that, I know you touched a little bit about Little Mermaid. But if you want to let our listeners know a little bit more information, we'll also drop the link in the show notes. Yeah, the dates, where to get tickets, et cetera. Everyone can get their butts over there.
Wait, it's nptheater.org. I'm sure you'll put that up there. And then right on our homepage, it says get your mermaid tickets. August 19th is a Friday, 7 p.m. August 20th, 2 shows, 2 and 7. Then it's done. And you're going to miss it. And you're going to be sad. Because it is fun. It is
and great. We don't want you all to be sad. We want everyone to be happy.
You got a great cast. Tiffany Tizell is playing Sebastian. She's in the area. She may live in Bridgeport. She's like got an amazing jazz and soul band. So she's going to be very cool for our Sebastian. Dr. Rydell Harrison is playing King Triton. He's awesome. And the cutest young lady, I sent you guys a picture of this, is a senior at the Hart School, not my student, Carolyn Paulson's student. And she, as Sydney Rose Horowitz, is playing Ariel. Adorable.
Amazing.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Curls on that. Beautiful curls on that lady's head, and we're not putting a red wig on her.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I love that.
Do it up.
And is it going to be like all the music from the show and everything?
Yeah, we got the rights from Disney and MTI.
All the classics.
We don't change anything. We're not allowed to change anything. It's the entire show. Not Junior. It's the entire show. You'll see a lot of trash items. The grotto is amazing. The grotto has so many trash things that have floated down to Ariel, like a Metro card. And different, right? And then the King Triton's throne is like a Game of Thrones, but with Starbucks cups and plastic.
I love Game of Thrones and epic. I love Starbucks. Yeah.
They should sponsor us just for all the play they're going to get on stage.
Hello, Starbucks, if you're Howard listening. Yeah. Call us. Call Kristen.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yay.
Awesome. So we have a really quick, fun game just to wrap up.
Okay.
Rapid fire. So first thing that comes to your mind.
Well, that can be dangerous. All right.
Okay.
I'll take the first one. Yeah. All right. Are you ready, Kristen? Do you have your competitive game pants on?
Yeah, they're shorts, but yes.
Your shorts, yeah. As it's hot. Okay. Last TV show you binged.
Discovering Anna.
Great.
Yeah.
A movie that never gets old.
Oh, I have a bunch. I love Color Purple. I love, I cry every time at the end. Doesn't matter. I've seen it 14,000 times. I guess I just love that.
Yeah. What's the last song that made you cry?
You know, it's so silly. It was a thing I saw, a video I saw on TV of a little girl singing Ariel's song, but she was just so intent on singing it and she was so into it. I just love anybody that puts that amount of thought into it.
Yeah.
And I just, I get teary and it's so silly.
Oh.
I love the effort.
Yeah. Favorite musical of all time?
Oh, Lord. For contemporary, I love Into the Woods. For
me too. Sorry, I just got excited. Me too.
That's it. For standards, I love Camelot.
Perfect. Another form of art you would like to dabble in one day?
Oh, I think I've already done so many. I can't add anything to my list. Not like I'm like, oh, great, I've done all that. It's just I'm not sure. Another form of art I'd like to dabble in. oh Lord, I don't know. I'm good writing. I guess, I mean, I wish I was a really good crafty person. I'm just not, but in my head I am, and then I do it.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
That's so funny. Okay. Best live theatrical experience you've been an audience member for?
Oh, an audience member. I was going to say company. Been an audience. I love the band's visit. I just was like and just her, it was especially Katrina, her specificity and her, it was just it, that I really loved.
She's great.
Yep.
If you could play any role in any show without constraints, what would you choose?
I got to consult my list of that I want to play. I mean, Ursula is a big one, you know, those kind of evil characters, but I guess ultimately it's going to have to be Madame Morrible, because that is, I mean, she's a teacher, she's a producer, she works with kids, you know, and I definitely understand her frustration with young people sometimes.
But hello to the Wicked. Hello to the Wicked producers. If you're listening, let's go.
Yep. Yeah, that's Telsey again. Hey, they were our company casting. Yeah. People. But yeah, call me on in for Madame Morrible. Love to do that.
Yes. And last one, a goal you would like to complete by the end of 2022?
Just getting through this summer, because it's a big concept and I'm like, who thought of this? You know, because it's a lot to stay on top of as a producer, time management, and a lot of great people, but you got to make sure everybody knows where they're going and the schedule is complete. Yeah, so just getting through the summer would be great.
I agree with that.
Yes, yes, yes. Same, same. Getting through the summer. Getting through July. Well, yeah. Kristen, this was amazing. You're awesome and a superwoman. Yeah. And we're so happy that
you're Professor Superwoman.
Exactly. My kids call it the Huffman Boot Camp.
Huffman Boot Camp.
I don't miss
around. Title of the episode.
I'm right exactly. out there. Right now, I know what we're looking for. And it's not just me, you know. So I try to be nice, but also I try to be like, This is where you should probably be aiming if you want to make this a career.
Facts. The Huffman Boot Camp. Love it.
Love it.
That one of my students, one of my former students, Jake, named it that.
Shout out to Jake.
Everybody, I shout out to everybody.
We love Jake. Before we go, can you let our listeners know where they can find you and keep up with you on social media or your website, or what's the best way that everyone can keep up with Kristen?
I mean, I'm writing that down too. I like that. My website is my name, Kristin Huffman, HUFFMAN.com. I'm on Facebook because I'm that age. I'm on Facebook a lot, so you can find me there too. I am on Instagram, but I don't do that as much. So I would just say, honestly, I would say Facebook through New Paradigm Theater Company or through my own website.
Nice.
Come see the show, introduce yourself to me. That's what I would say.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait to see it. That sounds incredible, incredible, incredible.
Thank you. Thanks.
And if you're tuning in and you don't follow us, everyone, follow us at Survival Jobs Pod on Instagram and Twitter, Survival Jobs a Podcast on Facebook. Shoot us an email at survivaljobspod@gmail.com. Follow Jason at Jason A. Coombs, and I'm Sammy Toots.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're the best. Thank you for joining.
You all are so positive and just a nice breath of fresh air, both of you.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Thank you. Let me know if you want tickets. Happy to do it.
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
We'll all get tickets.
All right. Great.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RERISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.